This is the Big Three Podcast with Brian Robb, Michael Pina, and Rich Levine.
All right, Dog Days edition of the Big Three Podcast. My name is Brian Robb, joined, as always, by Michael Pina of Vice Sports and Rich Levine. It's mid-August. The biggest news that's coming out now is schedule release stuff. So let's just start, you know, Rich, you were on the Cape Cod recently. How's the Cape?
Cape, Cape was Cod. Beautiful, man. The Cape Cod. It was, I would say the weather was like a C, but the company was very nice.
Cloudy?
It was cloudy. A lot of overcast mornings, burnout by the afternoon. It was good, but I guess sort of what's been happening in the last, how long has it been since we did one of these? Like a month?
Feels almost it. Yeah, it was right before my honeymoon, I think, was the last one. So yeah, I think like 3 or 4 weeks here.
Yeah, how was your honeymoon, by the way?
Honeymoon was good.
Yeah, everything was fresh.
Yeah, everything got like nice and sunburned in the first couple of days and then went through like 4 bottles of sunscreen after that.
Okay, so apparently we were talking earlier today. There are some people, we're not going to call anyone else, but there's been some talk when it comes to like off-season grades for the NBA that like sort of the national media isn't too psyched about what the Celtics did. Like, what's the main beef that people have right now with what Ainge did? Because I think the three of us can probably agree. We don't agree on everything, but like I feel like it was a pretty amazing off-season.
Right, so I'll just really quickly recap what happened and why. I mean, I personally think it's a little silly to criticize Boston's offseason. So the guys that they lost, in a nutshell, are Avery Bradley, who we all love. He's incredible. Kelly Olynyk, who I love, and I think they will miss him a little bit. And essentially they replaced those guys with Gordon Hayward and Marcus Morris and Jason Tatum, who they traded the first pick for the third pick and a future first round pick in 2018 or 2019. So, I mean, there's two real big cruxes, I think, with people criticizing the Celtics, and they are that trade that I just mentioned where Boston traded the first overall pick in a draft where, you know, it felt like Markelle Fultz was, I don't know if he was head and shoulders above everybody else, but he was number one on a majority of draft boards across the internet, and I think a lot of teams had him number one. The Celtics obviously did not have him number one, and so they traded him, or they traded that pick for the third pick, which became Jason Tatum, who, you know, you can't really have too many wing scorers or guys that size right now in the league. And so it's he has value there, but you also have Jaylen Brown on the team and you just signed Gordon Hayward to a max contract. So there's a little bit of an overlap there and I understand the criticism, but just overall, my opinion is when you get someone like Gordon Hayward, who was an all-star last year, who's in his prime, you had a good summer. And I don't understand what all the criticism is about.
Yeah, so I think I'm with you, Mike, again, with like the number one. I mean, the perfect offseason in my mind would have been you trade for George and you sign Hayward. Obviously, that didn't happen, and you really can't fault the Celtics at all for that not happening. We won't get into that. We kind of covered that ground already on the George front. But they got their guy. If they didn't get their guy, it would have been a bit of an issue in Hayward, but they got him. And then I like the things they did around him in a sense of, you know, you get Bradley Morris deal, I guess I can see the criticism there. I just think you downgraded slightly on the court, perhaps, and slightly in terms of what your need was. But Rich, I mean, you get a guy who's also on one of the best contracts, you know, in the league, non-rookie edition, I feel like right now, signed for $5 million for the next couple of years. That's pretty big for this team moving forward when they're going to have to pay all these guys.
Yeah, I mean, not to mention they had to do it. You know, it's not like Danny and Zarin were like, oh, shit, like, we've had enough of having Avery Bradley on this team. Like, let's swap him, you know? Like, they, by way of the salary cap and, like, a little bumped down on what they thought the cap was going to be. They had to do it, but I don't understand. So what, like, what would people have wanted the Celtics to do? Like, what could Ainge have done to get a positive review?
Like that's as good of a win now player as you're going to get from Bradley. I felt like going into an expiring contract. Like, I don't think maybe you could have gone for like a pick or something like that, but that would have been, I would have been panning that. Cause it's like, well, what's another pick going to do for you right now? You need players that can help you win. And that's what Morris does.
Yeah. I think to play devil's advocate, you don't trade Bradley and you trade Marcus Smart, I think is the thing, yeah. But we've had many discussions about why that would be silly, because Marcus is so much cheaper. He's younger. And
well, I could see trading Marcus.
I know you could see trading Marcus. but yeah, Bradley's, it's just like the finances, which you brought up. He's about to be an unrestricted free agent, and now the Detroit Pistons have to pay him a boatload of money. And we're not arguing whether or not he's worth it, but it didn't really make sense given in Boston's cap sheet situation and what they're trying to do over the next 4-5 years here, it didn't really make sense to pay him $100 million. So you trade a guy like Bradley and you're able to bring back a Marcus Morris who can contribute right away. And, you know, I talked a little bit earlier about the positional overlap. That could be a good thing. That could be a bad thing. I actually think, you know, having as many versatile pieces as possible is great. And it really fits into how the Celtics want to play. I'm trying to play devil's advocate, and I don't know. I thought they hit a lot of the moves around the edges too, like Aaron Baines. I thought that was a really good signing with the rim exception. I don't watch college basketball, so it's really difficult for me to say that Fultz was this incredible prospect who is transcendent and could be the next franchise player, and is a perennial all-star. I don't know for sure. I don't know how good Jason Tatum is. I mean, they both look pretty good in summer league. Fultz obviously in a limited stint because of his injury, but I don't know. I just don't, the criticism is it's a little harsh.
So you, when you say you did watch summer league, there's no question that Tatum has a unique scoring ability. I mean, and the kid was born in 1998. So that's, I don't know how anyone can and then you consider, like, who knows what's going to happen with the draft next year. You consider the fact that you got that extra top five pick. But we saw, you know, Kevin Pelton also had, you know, their win projection was at 49, which I think is interesting. I would assume that this would at least be a 50-win team. But, Mike, I know you sort of said a couple times that you think these guys are going to be worse in the regular season this year than they were last year. And what is it? Is that just like just learning to play with each other?
Yeah,
just...
I think it's, you know, continuity was such a big part of this team's kind of annual like growth from year to year. And from Brad Stevens' first year with the team, just how they've improved year to year in the win total column. And a lot of that is adding a guy like Al Horford last season, obviously, and trading for Isaiah Thomas. But those guys, the core players, I thought, you know, they knew each other's tendencies. They would talk about it a lot. Jay Crowder would talk about knowing where to be on the floor, floating around the perimeter when Isaiah drove. He just knew where to be. Isaiah could find him. That sort of thing that's just like nonverbal communication on the offensive end. They really had it down pat. So you had those pieces. You had guys like Amir Johnson who knew their role. Jerebko knew his role. You had a veteran like Gerald Green come in and really not upset the apple cart. And now, you know, it's just a lot of turnover. I think the way the Celtics like to play with two bigs who can space the floor, it'll be a little bit harder to do that now with Kelly Olynyk gone. I don't know if they've necessarily solved their rebounding issues, although I think they'll be a little bit better. Yeah, I mean, players like Avery Bradley, who, you know, we know what he can contribute on the defensive end. And so they lose a little bit of that. They lose a little bit of his spacing. But like all in all, also, I should say that they, you know, they lost a little bit of their depth too, and that was a big thing. So if someone gets injured, they could always have someone step up. The East
is just backcourt? So bad.
You talking about your depth in the backcourt, Mike?
Yeah, just like all around, like just, you know, having a guy.
I think their depth has gotten better.
It's really young.
It's young. I mean, it's young depth, but I think at least the rotation wise, I feel like this year you have nine, assuming that Tatum can play right away, you have nine guys you can count on in the rotation immediately, and that's not before getting to all the non-Tatum rookies. So that's what's encouraging for me. I feel like last year, you know, you had a lot of trick-or-treat guys coming off the bench with, you know, Olynyk, dare I say Jonas Drebko's in that category. I can't do that to Jonas. Gerald Green, obviously. But now, I mean, depending on how they do the starting five, you could conceivably have like Rozier, Crowder, Morris, and Tatum coming off the bench.
Yeah, no, I mean, Rozier's a tricky one, right? Like, he had a great postseason, relative to his expectations. And, you know, will he be able to? I think a lot of people last year thought, me included, that he would be able to step up and be the backup point guard from day one and contribute at a pretty high level for 15 minutes a game at least. So I don't know with him. I think he's a little bit of a question mark, just playing devil's advocate here with how things will shake out. Again, I think the team will be fine. I think they're better in games that matter in the playoffs when you have someone like Gordon Hayward, Isaiah Thomas, who we haven't had a podcast since we learned that he will not need surgery. That's obviously a big thing. But we're not sure, you know, how the pieces will fit necessarily. It's not going to be seamless from day one, I don't think, as opposed to when you add someone like Horford, who basically was coming into a situation where the Hawks played almost identically on the offensive end to how the Celtics played. And he just kind of came in and was like, it was great. It was seamless. I don't know if it necessarily will be that way. It could be, but I understand why the projection is a little bit lower for the regular season.
You know what worries me just a little bit with Tatum? And obviously, like, Jalen's such an easy comparison based on, you know, what he did last year. I think that, you know, you saw Jalen was able to step into the starting lineup a little bit and just kind of, like, blend in among, you know, sort of veteran stars. And I don't know. I just think Tatum's game is so, you know, he needs the ball. He needs to shoot. And you want him to shoot in most situations. I just wonder, you know, how well he'll do or how well he'll fit in when he's, you know, very well could be like the third or fourth option. A lot. I mean, that's scary to think about, you know, for a sub to have a five-man unit where Tatum could be the fourth option. But, you know, I just think that he's a guy that's used to sort of being the center of attention.
Yeah,
and I wonder how he'll do otherwise.
And I think that part of his game was on display in Summer League, obviously. What makes me a little bit encouraged on that front is, like, I feel like Coach K plays like a very, like, ISO-type offense, where he puts, again, these star-type players in situations where there's not a ton of ball movement. There's not a ton of, like, you know, pace and space, I feel like, compared to what Stevens runs. So, you know, hopefully Tatum can kind of, like you said, integrate that more into his game since, yeah, that is like, you know, you don't want him taking bad shots. And he did a lot of that in Summer League. He obviously made a bunch of them, but that's not going to fly, I feel like, when the real games start.
No, and you know, there's just a lot of other question marks down the roster when we look at Yabusele, Zizic, will Theus play? Who's going to be the 16th guy who doesn't even make the team?
Who do you guys think on that early? Who's got that?
I think Nader's done. Yeah, I think he's... I'm not confident with Nader.
You think he's not going to make it?
Because the wings are so, really? I mean, that thing, they're deep at the wing, as is. Whereas Larkin, you could probably use a little insurance behind Rozier there. I feel like if Rozier goes into a a rut and looks like he did for half of last season.
No, I was just going to say, essentially, it's sort of like an upgrade over the Demetrius Jackson role. And it's just a really good insurance policy at a really important position. Not saying Shane Larkin's going to light the world on fire, but I mean, you know, he can at least, he has NBA experience. So I would, and just the fact that they signed him kind of tips their hand a little bit. Like, why would you do that if you didn't plan to keep him? So I don't know. That's just a guess, though.
Yeah, I mean, I if it came down to Larkin or Nader, I would want to keep Nader. I think I there's something about that kid. I don't know. It seems like he's gonna be an NBA player, I think. And he just, I don't know. I can see him just being one of those guys. You know, and I know that the wings are you added so many already. I mean, it's already like a crowded situation, but. I don't know. Like, what is Shane Larkin going to be the difference between beating the Warriors? I just think I'd rather take a risk on what Nader can become. Because I think Larkin is kind of is who he is, and we're still waiting to see what Nader's ceiling might be. And I've only seen him play in summer league. Clearly, he was pretty awesome in the D League last year.
He was a rookie of the year.
Was he the MVP
in the D-League.
Or all? Rookie of the year, so he had a pretty good year. I don't know. I mean, it's a ridiculous conversation.
No, it's a good. I think it's a fun conversation, though. And you're right, Rich. It's like you don't know what he is yet. Like he was a good soldier. He went to the D League, probably turned down a lot of money overseas, developed there, played well. Then they gave him the guaranteed money here, which he earned. And so, yeah, I honestly, it'll probably be more just like who plays the best, who in training camp. It might just come down to that. Like honestly, like usually there's like a. Positionally need stuff like, you know, some guy's not going to make it because you just don't need a fourth point guard or an eighth wing. But the Celtics at least have the flexibility here where you're paying both guys anyway. There's really nothing else to consider except like.
Yeah, if Rozier looks like he's taking a leap in preseason or whatever in training camp, then obviously you don't need Larkin. But yeah, it's obviously a lot of variables that. We will see develop over the next couple weeks.
So I have a question for you guys. Getting back to the national criticism stuff. I think, you know, the Bradley Morris stuff, I think we made a pretty good case for already. And you talked about the Tatum trade, Mike, or the number one pick trade that turned into Tatum. How, based on the rest of the moves that have happened in Brooklyn and LA and Sacramento over the last few weeks of the offseason here, with Caldwell Pope going to the Lakers, with Crab going to the Crab stuff is not relevant to those picks, but I guess the Sacramento and Philly again loading up with like decent talent. You know, they're not gonna be good, but like they're not gonna be bottom feeders necessarily in a couple years. Is this something where we look at that return and that pick could be, again, I'd be very curious to see if the Celtics look at this now and they like those Lakers protections at 2-5, or if they wish they maybe extended that Lakers protection to like 6, 7, or 8, because who knows how bad the Kings and the Sixers are going to be in a couple years.
It's tricky, obviously. I don't think they anticipated Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Signing with the Lakers on that 1-year deal. That was pretty weird.
Which happened because of the Bradley trade, which is kind of
crazy.
Yeah,
well, what was the timing on that? Didn't they renounce KCP before that trade? Oh, I thought it was
before. They
renounced
him after the trade.
Either way, that was weird. The Brook Lopez, getting Brook Lopez, which like no one talks about the fact that Brook Lopez is on the Lakers. He's not... Like, I know he played for the worst team in the league last year, but he's not terrible. He's instantly there.
No.
Yeah, he was.
He was quite good last year on a bad team.
Mm-hmm. So.
Especially with the three-point shot.
I think you don't change the protections because you don't want the sixth or seventh or eighth pick. That's kind of the whole point of, like, they kind of foolproofed it here as best they could, where. if the Lakers improved so much that they're technically still in the lottery, but they get a 7, 8, 9 pick or whatever, then you get the Kings that the following year when, I mean, Sacramento will probably be a little bit better this year, but I don't know. Like the players that they signed are pretty old. I would not say that my expectations are pretty low for those guys this year. And then, another year into the contract, it could get really ugly. They could trade those contracts. So I would still be pretty confident in Sacramento screwing up royally and, that pick becoming extremely valuable and bearing fruit. So I don't know if you would change anything. But it's interesting just like how, even if Fultz is better than Tatum, it looks like both will have, you know, it's fair to say both are highly touted prospects, and the Celtics like Tatum at number one anyway, and getting another pick for, you know, a potential blockbuster trade down the line, just adding another asset, it made sense, and it's a fine trade. I just don't get killing it. Like
you can't kill it. It makes no sense for people to kill it.
Right, you can play the let's wait and see card. Obviously, like that's the only logical way to do anything in sports. But yeah, to assume that it's a disaster is absolutely insane.
Yeah, what is that intent to sell?
There's
what
no way that they, that Zebo was actually design? Selling that weed, right?
Well, I think
if you have a certain amount, so he had 2 pounds of weed on him, and if you have a certain amount, they just assume that there's no way that anyone would travel with this insane amount of weed without the intent to sell it. But I just think Zebo probably just rolls around with bricks of weed in his backpack.
We're like, what do you want? What do you want for?
Yeah. We're in a street dance party. You got to bring the weed. Yeah, that was too bad though. I was happy. I mean, cause I saw him trending. I saw the name and I was like, oh shit. Like what does Zebo do? And then I saw the arrest headline. But then when I could imagine what happened, when I saw it was just weed, I'm like, okay.
Nothing to see here. All right. Any other things about the criticisms we want to get off our chest here?
Well, I don't have one for the criticism, but like speaking of the Shane Larkin a little bit, and this is where it gets a little difficult because the guy's in a contract year. You know he's wanting to play for max money regardless of whether or not he's going to get it. But how many minutes a game does Isaiah Thomas average this year? And will he be willing to sort of to maybe chill out a little bit in the regular season?
I mean, the balancing act Isaiah's going to have to do here, I feel like, is tricky from not just that standpoint, but from a health standpoint. You know, you hope the hip is good to go in training camp, but say it's not. Say it's still giving him trouble. It requires a lot of maintenance. You know, does he take it easy a little bit more during the year instead of like playing through it and like toughing it out like a crazy man he did out like last offseason, like postseason to his credit, knowing that the big payday that you've played your whole career for is waiting and might not be there if you really hurt it bad again and have to go under surgery next year. So it's going to be, you know, hopefully it's not an issue and he's just good to go health wise and just, you know, I'm not worried about him and Hayward meshing. I think that's going to, if anything, you'll, you know, just make Isaiah more efficient, and he's, you know, he's not going to put up the crazy numbers he put up last year, 'cause I wouldn't expect him to do that anyway. Like obviously the fourth quarter too, it was just nuts, but I think I'm more worried about how health kind of factors into the season.
When you add someone like Hayward, the benefit of it for Isaiah is just lower usage, which as you said, B-Rob, ups the efficiency, in theory. I don't really care about the per game numbers. I don't think he should either. It's highly unlikely that he's going to average, what did he average last year? 29 points a game. Yeah. I that's not going to happen again. It was one of the best offensive seasons in NBA history. That's not hyperbole. And I do think that we could see him be I do think, you know, in the fourth quarter, I don't know about averaging 10 points a game or whatever, but in terms of hitting big shots regularly, I don't see that letting up at all. And I think in clutch moments, 5 minutes, scoring margin within 5 points, I think he could be even better with someone like Hayward also on the floor. So I think it's a really big addition for him. I think you get paid based on winning in this league. More so than numbers, as teams have, you know, increased their intelligence levels. And I just, the amount that he does talk about the max contract and the confidence with which he believes he's going to get it and the obsession, the obsessive nature with which he discusses it is a little concerning maybe, but I think everything will work itself out in the end.
Should I send him my article, guys? Already? About why at BostonSportsJournal.com about why he's probably not getting one. Maybe he'll.
Yeah, I think just wait until the season starts and like just tuck it into his locker room, his locker. Or shove it down the front of his shirt.
This is just like the market and other guys are on the league, but here's 2,000 words on why you're probably going to have to settle for like $25 million a year. Probably 3 years instead of the 5-year max. All right, good talk.